You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Daniel Rue, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. I wanted to do a preview of the Blazers-Warriors first-round series and talked with Eric Garcia-Gunderson, who is the host, actually the co-host because he does it with Dane Carbaugh, of Locked On Blazers and talented writer. So we go for about 45 minutes on the series, what we're hoping to see, the possibilities with Yusuf Nurkic and everything else that's going on, and hope you enjoy it.
Welcome to another edition of the playoff preview, Locked On Warriors, Locked On Blazers crossover podcast. Danny LaRue, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I am excited for this series for a lot of different reasons. It lost some of its sizzle with the Yusuf Nurkic being limited out. We don't know exactly yet. That'll probably be out kind of around the time that this gets released, which is always fun. But these are teams that have played an immense amount of entertaining games against each other at full strength, at less than full strength. So I'm just ready to roll.
Yeah, me too. I'm very excited for this series. I'm just excited for the games. Like, no matter how long this series goes, these two teams do play fun games against each other for the most part. I know the first meeting was, Golden State whooped them, and I think Portland was really in a really bad place at that time. But the series last year was great, and I'm looking forward to round two. Even if it's a sweep, I think these games will be very entertaining.
Right. And that, I think that was part of the story last year, too. Like, you and I talked, not because these podcasts didn't exist, but you and I talked in various capacities last year. And that was one of the most fun five-game series I can remember. And there were so many just twists and turns in it. And almost all of the games were interesting in their own way. And I think that part of the story of this series, which is so different from so many other series, is that each of these teams has just dealt with so much turnover over the course of the last, the last couple weeks with injuries and everything, and we're going to see lineups that we've never really spent much time with before.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting. Before we started this podcast, we were kind of talking about that, because looking at the Blazers, ever since they've been without Nurkic, it doesn't seem like they've been able to find they haven't really found a consistent starting lineup, really. They haven't really stuck with one. And then on the Warriors end of things, they clinched, and then they've been resting everyone, right? I mean, someone has been resting like every other game, so they have not had like the full complement, I think is what you said.
Right. So they clinched against Phoenix on April 5th, and Durant didn't play in that game. He hadn't come back yet. And since then, they've sat somebody important in every single game because they didn't have that long to really rest. And they, they had games where they kind of took it easy. And so basically, it has been functionally since the All-Star break. The game that I would say is the real full strength, you could argue, was February 27th against the Sixers. But the game that I really think of is February 23rd against the Clippers, which was the first game after the All-Star break. That was the last time that that we really saw the, peak of their powers, Warriors. That was a game where they had a really good stretch early, and then, they ended up winning pretty comfortably.
Yeah, and another thing that I think adds an interesting wrinkle to this matchup is that these teams haven't played each other in a really long time. And even though Nurkic his status is in doubt, and I don't necessarily believe that he's going to be back. I am just worried about the whole thing with him having a fractured leg, as cool as it would be. But even without him in the middle, the Blazers are playing they're just playing differently. They're playing Noah Vonleh a lot. He might start game one. Then they started Myers Leonard against Utah, and that was the game that Lillard had 59, so they could start Myers. One of the interesting subplots is, what is Terry Stotts going to do with the starting lineup? Because we know that, JaVale's not going to start over Zaza in game one, right?
No. I mean, and so there are various ideas that different people have about what the Warriors should do with their big man rotation, but it doesn't seem like the unconventional stuff is going to come early. I'm actually, my idea, which I've said a couple times, is that I think they should start David West and play him 4 to 5 minutes and then pull him and then go to Draymond at center and then go with David West then back again in his normal spot at the beginning of the second quarter. That's the way that I would do it. I am 100% convinced that is not what Steve Kerr is going to do.
It seems like one of the subplots of this series and this postseason for the Warriors is that those Kerr decisions, and I guess we get a little bit of a test run here against a Blazers team that, is has very low odds, but could make them uncomfortable.
Portland has unusual strengths. I mean, they have one of the best offensive guard combinations in the league, arguably the best. I mean, you have to go in a lot of different directions. Steph and Clay are a very different type of offensive guy because both Damian and CJ are so good with the ball in their hands. That's what makes them different than Steph and Clay. And that becomes a challenge for the Warriors because it changes the way that they use Steph and Curry defensively. And also the Warriors switch a lot, so maybe it won't change it that much in that context. And also, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but the Warriors have this ace in the hole, which they've used against the Blazers in the past, including last year in the playoffs, which is the Draymond at center lineups. We haven't actually seen that much of that this season for a variety of reasons, but I am completely unsure how much we're going to see that in the first round because the Warriors have used this crazy long view for this whole season. You know, it's been one of the fundamental differences between this year and last year. Last year, partially because of Kerr's back injury and the pride that they felt, they were going for it all from the jump. Like, that's just the way they treated last season. This year, as great as they've been, 67 wins, fourth best point differential in the history of the NBA, it seems like they've been on autopilot for long stretches of this season. So we're just going to see all of this all in one flush with the whole Kevin Durant return angle of this whole thing.
Yeah, this is a very interesting season because they still won 67 games, which I believe that's what they won the year they won the title.
Correct.
But yeah, the whole Durant wrinkle, I do wonder if, you know, they did play together one game since he's been back, but I do wonder whether, you know, I'm interested to see how they're going to react when it's just a little bit more pressurized. It's the first round and it's not the finals or anything, and it's not their goal. It's not their end destination. But I do think, Portland has the potential to get them in a tight game because CJ and Dame can score so well. And then you throw out a guy like Allen Crabbe, who's a great shooter on the wing. And they have, they have three really, really, really good shooters that can maybe keep them within arm's length. And I think that even if they don't have Nurkic, just the sheer firepower of Lillard, McCollum, Crabbe, maybe whatever you can scrap from Harkless, Aminu, and maybe Myers Leonard, who wasn't in the series last time, if he can knock down threes, then you have an opportunity to get one and not make this a sweep.
Yeah, I think that's certainly possible. And another way of putting it is that the Warriors, especially when they go really heavy switching, that style of defense, what it is designed to do is force the other team into playing a lot of isolation, a lot of one-on-one. The Blazers have two really, really good players at that. So it's different to make that your calculus when you have a team that can actually do it well and can maximize mismatches at certain moments and everything else. So I'm excited to see how they do that, but also just the idea of really seeing what it might even not be in this series, but what an engaged Durant looks like in this system, and also what they go to, if times get tough. You know, if the Blazers, as you said, if they give him a game, what is Kerr's comfort level? Does he go back to a traditional center? Which center does he trust the most? Or do they go with Draymond at the five and then Iguodala, Durant, Clay, and Steph? That's what I assume it's going to be, but we don't know it until we see it.
Right. One of the things that I've been looking at in this series that because of the situation that Steph had last year coming back in game four, that I don't think we saw a whole lot of because we only got to see two games of it. But one of the things that I think maybe gives Portland a little more hope to stay with them, and like you said, to take advantage of that switching defense, is McCollum. Because more so than Dame, because I think Dame's going to do what he does. And I think based on last year, they put Clay on him for a lot of that. And I don't know where do they put Steph, because I don't particularly like, from Golden State's perspective, the Steph CJ matchup. And I think that CJ could have a much better series than he had the last time around. I know the Warriors do protect Steph, but I think CJ does have opportunities in switch situations, in ISO situations, to take advantage of that.
It's going to be a major question for the Warriors this time, because they would love to kind of get Steph in favorable matchups when they can, but that if they do that, basically what you're saying is Kevin Durant's going to be guarding McCollum or Lillard at moments, and he's not all the way back yet. I mean, he had, I think it was 24 points in the first half against the Lakers, but that's scoring, and that's a little bit different. Defensively, he's moving pretty well, but not all the way. You know, that's the nature of a knee injury, is that it takes a little while to get 100%, and we'll see where he is at that point. You know, maybe they've been kind of ramping it up a little bit, but I don't know if they want to give him that right away. The advantage that Durant has, and we've actually seen this in a couple of different matchups, Harden is one other example. He has a big advantage in those circumstances, should they go to that. I think it'll more be on switches, not a base assignment, because he's just so long that he doesn't necessarily have to stay with the guy. It's a different approach, but he's very good at it. You actually see this a lot from power forwards and centers on switches, which is they the most agile, Nerlens Noel does this actually sometimes. They know that they can't necessarily stick with the guy, but they know that they can get their hand where the ball is going. And Durant, he can kill step backs because he doesn't have to be next to you to block a step back. He can be a couple feet away and just reach that long arm out there.
No, that's a good point. And it'll be interesting to see how he stays, you know, if they end up going to that, if CJ does start to kind of go off, because, you know, Dame had the one game where he had 40 and 10, where they won game three in that series. But I thought towards the end of that game five, which was another close game, I thought that CJ was actually like the better option down the stretch of that game. And that was more so because of the matchup. Obviously, Steph wasn't all the way right then either. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they adjust if McCollum can get going, because I think for the Blazers, even in that Clippers series, I thought a lot of their success, you know, the Clippers were decimated. But I very much remember, like, in Game 5 of that series in L.A., you know, CJ really closed that out because they had J.J. Redick on him. And so I think CJ could be in a position to take advantage of mismatches, but yeah, Durant being there, his length, and just the whole Warriors defense is going to do a good job of trying to close those things off.
Yeah, and that ties in with what I think is the storyline of this series when the Warriors are on defense, which is how aggressively do they help off of Harkless and Aminu? I mean, Harkless is obviously going to shoot more threes than he has in the last four games, but the Warriors last year had this approach with those two guys, basically saying, we're okay with letting them beat us. And that decision is actually one of the, if they stick with it, which I think they will, I think that's going to inspire more Allen Crabbe. And I also think that's going to create even more problems for Portland this year because of the switch from Harrison Barnes to Durant. Like, Barnes can execute a team scheme very well, but he's just not that difference maker in that way. And if you're basically telling Durant, just get in the middle of this and mess everything up because he's theoretically guarding Harkless, he will do a really good job in that spot. And then Iguodala is underrated as a kind of utility defensive player. People think of him as a man-to-man guy, but when he can just muck things up instead, he can do a really, really, really good job.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that Portland had a little bit of success in that the Warriors adjusted to in the last series was getting Draymond's guy mixed up and getting Draymond's guy to set picks in pick and rolls and not allow him to be the help guy. But now that you have Durant there as another help defender who can protect the rim from a weak side position, it does make it a lot harder to, you know, have success with that strategy because Durant can do that.
It also is a reminder of how interesting it's going to be with or without Nurkic in terms of the minutes that Pachulia plays. Because Pachulia, he was terrible at pick and roll early in the year. He's inconsistent against the best combinations throughout the year. And do the Blazers go to it a lot early just to make sure they can? And who does that work with? How do they handle switching and everything like that? And do they kind of risk something that way by playing him off the court a little bit, going to either Draymond at center, going to David West, who's better in those kind of circumstances, or even maybe some JaVale. It's all a coin flip with the Warriors centers. It's just a weird circumstance. But I wonder how Pachulia faring in this matchup not only affects this series, which I think it could be important, but also affects moving forward, because trust is always nebulous when you're dealing with guys that are in their first playoffs with a single team.
That's a good point. And one of the things that you just made me think of talking about the Warriors centers, if Kerr ends up going with Pachulia, you know, if the Blazers think that, I think to save maybe to try and to attempt to match up speed-wise with Draymond, I don't think they're going to start Vonleh, because they've been using – the Blazers have been using a small ball lineup with Vonleh at the five a lot off the bench. And when they started that lineup, it didn't work out too well. He picked up a lot of fouls. And I think if Nurkic doesn't go, I think they're going to start Myers Leonard and try and make Pachulia guard out to the three-point line.
Right. And that lineup gives the Warriors some real fits defensively, because if you try whichever guy Curry is on or whatever of a pick and roll with Leonard, switching that is devastating if the Warriors have a traditional center on the floor, because both of your guards are just so good at handling that situation. And if they try to fight over it, there are issues there. If they try to go under it, there are issues there. And with Leonard, I mean, I was at the game against Minnesota where he couldn't hit anything and the crowd was antsy, but then he played a lot better against the Jazz, and it gives you an upside that you don't necessarily have either way. And part of me is sad that there isn't a Mason Plumlee anymore in this series, because the Warriors just didn't respect him. And I don't know why, I just found that intensely amusing, because just you see these moments where a team just knows a player so well and they just go, okay, we know what we're doing here.
Yeah, and he was eaten alive in that series by Draymond. I mean, he shot 34% in that series. And he did a great job of helping handle the ball and make things happen that way. It wasn't as if he was a complete waste in the series. I think he was third in assists. But, you know, it is interesting. And I wonder, too, the one game that was actually close in the regular season, Evan Turner had his best game, probably his best game of the year. And Turner has been super disappointing, and he had a really rough start to the season, and things improved. He started, he lost, he got hurt. The Blazers played really great when he was out. But if they do have that kind of pressurized defense where they're ignoring Aminu, they're ignoring Harkless in the corner, maybe you combat that by saying, okay, we'll have Turner run the offense, Crab, CJ, Dame, and one other guy, and see what happens and see if you can kind of get things going that way. And I think in that respect, I think Turner is probably better in the playoffs than he is in the regular season.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I was just thinking you might not have a clear-cut answer for this. I feel like Ed Davis, starters versus starters, would have had big trouble in this series, but he could have had a really nice role in some of those backup unusual units.
And he was really solid last year. I mean, yeah. if we're talking about last year's Ed Davis, I think, he was probably the best big in the series for the Blazers last year. I thought he really did a nice job finishing around the basket. He got a bunch of offensive rebounds, and it is a bummer that they don't have him. I will say though that in the back half of the season and throughout his career, like one of the few things that Noah Vonleh has been good at throughout his career is he's been pretty good at crashing on the offensive glass. And if Portland can get that from those second units or small ball lineups when Vonleh is out there, because Leonard is not really a guy who crashes, especially when he's stepping out to three, he's got to get back on defense. Maybe Noah can kind of Vonleh can create a little bit of havoc there on the glass. He's not what Ed Davis was last year, but he does give the Blazers a little bit of that friskiness on the offensive glass that they without Nurkic, they just don't have.
So we talked a little bit about how Golden State will defend Portland, focused on the guard rotation. Who do you think Terry Stotts trusts enough to guard Durant and to guard Curry? Like how does that all of that work with this Portland squad?
That's a really good question, because last year, the lineup that they had out there where they had two guys who were defenders to kind of take that duty over from CJ and Dame with Harkless and Aminu in the lineup, I don't think that they're going to go with that. They're going to have Harkless in there. And man, I guess as weird as it is, they could go with Vonleh there instead of going small. They could try and do Vonleh on Kevin Durant, because I really think that that's probably their best chance. And they did have Vonleh guarding Giannis a couple of weeks ago. So and that's kind of the closest they've had to seeing a Durant. So if I was to say a guy that they would put on Durant, I would say that they put Vonleh on Durant and they go Vonleh Leonard 4-5 and kind of go big to start.
I think we could see some Evan Turner as well. Like Turner's not perfect for that, but he can just kind of be a pain in the butt enough to make it work.
Yeah, and when he's engaged, he's probably, he's a really good perimeter defender. I don't think he's better than Harkless or Aminu, but when he's engaged, he can be really good. And I agree with you that Turner. Another interesting thing was last year was that Portland was able to use Gerald Henderson at the four a lot, and I wonder if Turner could downsize as a four in certain situations.
I think we're going to see that too. I've been wondering about that as well, just because the idea people always focus on, well, not always, but often focus on downsizing in terms of the center position, you know, going with a nominal power forward or whatever. Sliding a true small forward to power forward is also a really big change that certain teams, it just doesn't work. Certain teams, it does. And Turner at the four, Harkless at the, well, Harkless is a little bit more nebulous, but I think that's worth trying. Whether it works or not is an open question, but I also, one of the things that I'm just struggling with in this series is we don't have any clear-cut idea of what the Warriors' rotations are going to look like because they changed so much during the year, and because one of the definitive moments in it was that Durant missed the last, like, month and a half of the year. You know, so you have this idea of, oh, if they do an extension of the regular season rotation, of the late regular season rotation, then maybe that's an option, but who really knows? I mean, we haven't seen it at all. Early on, they were trying Durant with the second unit, then they moved away from that and did Draymond with the second unit, then they moved away from that and did this really interesting group with Ian Clark, who actually has had two really good games against the Blazers this year, Clark, Klay Thompson, Iguodala, Matt Barnes, because Durant was out, maybe it would still be Matt Barnes, and David West. That lineup actually could do pretty well against some of Portland's second units, though they usually keep one of their good guards on the floor. Klay would presumably spend that time guarding that guy. So I don't know. Like, if they go to that, but just give the starters more minutes, that's an option. Maybe they just completely throw it out and do something totally different. I do not know.
Yeah, that is one of the best parts about this series, is just how much we don't know. And the rotations that Golden State uses have been pretty inconsistent, and I wonder how Portland's going to react to that. They definitely are going to keep one of the two guards on the floor, but it is going to be really interesting to see how Stotts approaches that, whether he goes, I mean, he really has no choice but to play super small. And one of the things about the Nurkic injury, obviously it sucks, but one of the blessings that came with that is that Portland was able to take a lot of their super small lineups out for a test drive that they otherwise would not have. You know, that they were having Aminu at center a lot. It didn't really work out last year against the Warriors, but I do wonder if just having more reps has made them more comfortable with that. And that's something that I'm really looking forward to seeing, is can a super downsized lineup with Aminu at center, who got beasted when he did play those minutes, have those reps helped? And that's another interesting thing I want to see, because those second units for Portland have been super small, super versatile, have played really nice defense too, and which has not happened a lot for them this season.
Yeah, that's been a part of the story here. And also, you could phrase this in two different ways, and the way that I would do it is planning and adjustment. So what each of these coaches wants to do is an open question, but also how they adjust and how quickly they adjust will also be worth watching, because I am totally comfortable saying that the rotations in game one of this series, the rotations in game four or five, however far it goes, those will probably be significantly different, because both teams are, you know, hopefully both teams are working in guys that are getting healthier. I would love to see Nurkic play in this series. Durant is obviously working his way back. And because they'll see what works and see what doesn't. It's part of the reason why I love seven-game series, is that you have the time to do this. You have if a team struggles, you can throw other things out there. That doesn't mean in any way, shape, or form that those things will work, but at least you can try it.
Right. And I think Portland and Golden State are both going to try a lot of it. You mentioned Clark. I think that Clark is going to get a lot of playing time because it seems like one of the things, at least from watching the Warriors, not as closely, but I do feel like Kerr likes to not, he likes to play those bench guys a lot. He doesn't, it doesn't seem to me that he makes his big minute, his starters play, you know, 40 minutes in the playoffs. And I think that Clark will probably get a lot of time just to go out and just bother one of those guys, and without Klay out there, just to mix it up and give those guys a break. Cause I feel like he seems with his rotations very sensitive to that.
He is, and there is a great awareness in the, and I mean great in terms of large, not great in terms of the positive thing, awareness of the wear and tear that that the playoffs can do, and the idea that they need to escalate, that they need to ramp up. And I was talking about this a little bit when I did Dunked On. We were talking about the Wizards series, and the idea that they're probably going to go for it from the beginning because they know that they need to win that series. It's a 4-5. So John Wall might play, 40 something minutes starting at the beginning of that series if he's healthy enough to. I don't think the Warriors are going to do that here. I think they're going to be in the, mid to high 30s for the most part, unless they get really threatened in a game or two. Then maybe they push it up. And you're right, that opens up minutes for him. And another X factor in this series, I mean, the Warriors 4 All-Stars are obvious X factors, but Sean Livingston has had a lot of trouble this season finding his way because they now have a lot more ball dominant capable players, and he can do well with those lineups, but it takes some feeling out, and he never really got it with Durant. But when Durant got out, they started swapping his minutes and he started playing more with Curry and less with the second unit, and that worked really well. And so that's one that could get squeezed the more that the starters play.
That's really interesting, because I thought Livingston, obviously, in those first couple of games, I think he went off in game one, and I don't think he missed a shot or something crazy. He totally dominated in that first game. I thought Portland couldn't guard him. He got to that mid range pull up and just made pretty much every single one. And that's interesting if they don't have him in the series.
He'll play. I mean, so uh-huh. What Livingston, basically what his kind of his niche this year has been, is that certain days his shot is absolutely going. It's kind of if he gets the right matchup and gets the right comfort area, then the other team just kind of has to tuck in a little bit because he's so good at getting his spots. He's kind of there are some parallels on the Blazers with that. And because he's so much taller than the guys most teams put on him, it becomes a big advantage. What I wonder about is how they want to deploy him, considering Portland's guard situation, with Dame and CJ. Maybe they use him in some of the circumstances where the other teams, another guy isn't, one of their two best guys isn't out there, or that they can slide Durant or Iguodala down onto CJ, or probably on CJ. I don't think they'd put him on Dame Lillard. Or that they feel they can contain the other guy just comfortably enough with whatever they have. And then you can let Livingston go to work. But a lot of times when the Blazers do that, because they don't really rely on a backup point guard in the traditional sense, they get into some spots where if Livingston tried to do that on Allen Crabbe, it's not going to work as well.
Yeah, and one of the things that you mentioned earlier in this podcast was that this series may, some of the things that with not guarding Harkless, not guarding Aminu, may force Stotts to use Crabbe more. I think, Crabbe has been a guy who has had an up and down season, even though his stats ended up really well, were really great at the end of the season, kind of back up to the levels where they were last year, especially with his shooting. And I think that I want to see him play, because I do think that when he's engaged, he's a much better, the difference in Crabbe's defense when he cares and when he doesn't is significant. And if he's all the way healthy, I really do think that, they need to get him in there. And I would not be surprised if Portland went super duper small, Crabbe, McCollum, Lillard, Turner, or something like that, just to get more offense on the court. And I do think that Crabbe's defense, when he's engaged, is a lot better than his overall defensive reputation. Because I remember the first half of the season, he didn't really play that much defense. And then I remember a Toronto game right after Christmas, and he D'd up DeRozan for the entire game. And he did I think he had a steal against Harden down the stretch of the Houston win a couple of weeks ago. I do think that Crabbe has the potential to get up a level in this series as well. And I like that they rested him as well and let his foot heal so that he can kind of rise up a level. Because I do think that in terms of just the two-way play, that they're going to need him to have a big series to have a chance.
They are. In Portland, we talked about the idea a little bit of just kind of how their rotations are going to look. If their base lineups do not work, which is a possibility, it's not a certainty, they do not have a ton of other things to throw out there. I mean, I don't think Shabazz Napier is the answer. So
You're not alone on that one.
Yeah, Crabbe is a possibility. The Vonleh against Myers Leonard possibility, Evan Turner, so those, I would say those are kind of their three big arrows that are not in that lineup. And all those guys are going to be playing no matter what, but just the different combinations and everything like that. And for the Warriors, partially because they're just so much healthier than Portland, and just the nature of getting good guys at the minimum, which is, it is what it is at this point. They have a lot more things they can try. I mean, that might be what JaVale McGee does in this series, is that when things aren't working, they throw him out there and just see how it goes. And with the guard rotation, I think that they're flexible enough that, and also Kerr's just nature of wanting to keep everybody happy, they'll just try different things out and see how it works. And I don't think they're going to focus that much on this series on putting their best lineups out there for very long. I think we'll see some stretches with it, and then the rest of the time they're just going to be feeling things out, making sure everybody stays happy.
Totally. And I think that is kind of, that approach is one of the things that it opens the door for Portland to get a game. And I think if they're going to get one, it's got to be, you know, they have great home court advantage here, but I think if they're, you know, I think if they're going to get one, I think it's got to be one of those first two. You know, if Nurkic doesn't come back at all, if it's just these two teams as currently constructed, no Nurkic, I really do think that one of these first two games, because of that, because of how the Warriors may be approaching it, how they may be trying guys, doing things, not really planning, you know, doing so much planning around Portland, that could open a door for Portland to steal one of those first two games. And I really think that if Nurkic doesn't come back, that's when they've got to make a run. Because I think Golden State, at least this season, they've been fantastic, but I feel like they do have a tendency to sleep a little bit sometimes. And maybe one of these first two games, not taking Portland very seriously, could be an opening for Portland to steal a win and get on the board.
The Warriors have lost one of the first two games in a series numerous times in their successful runs the last couple of years. They lost one of the two games at home. I know in the year they won the title, they lost one of the two against the Cavs and against the Grizzlies, and then last year they did against the Thunder as well. And it, you know, that's kind of the nature of how this can go sometimes with the Warriors, is that there's a story that they take some time to figure a series out, and then once they do well. That was really the story of the 2015 season. Last year it was a little bit different, but the whole thing was garbled up because of Curry's injury. I don't know if that's going to be true here, but also something that I want to watch here is, broadly speaking, the Warriors have done a really good job of figuring out, of playing teams that they're a repeat playoff opponent, playing them better the second time than they did the first time. So the Rockets, you know, they had that feeling out phase the first time in the Western Conference Finals. They did win that series comfortably, but then the second time they just exerted more control. There were some close games in that series. Did that with Cleveland. While we all focus on the fact that they blew the 3-1 lead, they also got the 3-1 lead. And they were in control of that series in many ways before everything fell apart. And while you can draw just as much on the ending as you can on the beginning, I want to see if they can use the approach they did against Portland from the beginning, or if the Nurkic injury and everything else just kind of garbles it up enough that they doubt their original game plan.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I wonder from Portland's perspective too, because they've had lots of playoff experience, but they haven't had a repeat opponent yet in the Lillard era. They haven't played a team a second time in a series. So from that perspective, I'm kind of interested to see, you know, where Portland goes with that, and you know, who do they put on Clay? Who do they put on Steph? I is another question, because I think they put Harkless onto Clay a lot last year, but then there was no Durant, and who they match up against, who they put Lillard on, will they have Lillard guarding Curry? Will they switch that, maybe put a bigger defender on Curry and have someone chase Clay? But I don't necessarily think that works out well, because, you know, Clay is just phenomenal off the ball. So Portland has a lot of questions to answer on the defensive end that this lineup, with the lineup that I think that they'll probably start with without Nurkic, with Vonleh and Leonard in there, is going to be harder for them to address some of those questions. And, you know, do they kind of throw that out the window? Do they go with Aminu at four and do something completely off the wall? Because it is hard for me to imagine when they go to Draymond at center or something like that, that Myers Leonard is going to be out there guarding him. And so the Warriors' tendencies to stick to a traditional big lineup at the start, I think, does help them in that regard a little bit. But I don't know if they're going to have enough, you know, defenders out there to really, you know, make Golden State work hard enough.
Yeah, it's definitely something to consider in this series, just the trade-offs. And the nature of moving from starters to backups is that usually one of the reasons that players are not starters in the NBA is that they're imbalanced in terms of their skill set. They're better on one end or the other. And Portland has a lot of those decisions to make. And that's why it's been so encouraging to see Allen Crabbe get better defensively, be more active, because that makes him a more viable player in the playoff setting. And so I'm excited to see how those dynamics play out, but I feel like we've been dancing around it a little bit. Do you, and it's totally fine with me if you don't, do you have a prediction for the series right now?
I think Portland wins a game, and if Nurkic comes back, I think they have a chance at winning too, but I do think, Nurkic or not, I just think that, you know, Lillard and McCollum are so good that I think they'll win a game in this series. But I won't go any farther than that. I think Blazers in five Warriors in five, excuse me. But if Nurkic is around, then it makes me think a little bit harder about, you know, maybe they can win a second game. But I don't think beyond that, that, you know, this team right now is going to be there. But, yeah, what are you feeling?
I'm of a very similar mind. I think that the combustibility in a positive way of Lillard and McCollum makes it less likely that we see a sweep, even if maybe the talent disparity is great. Portland, for until the last game of the season, Portland was the second best team in the league in net rating since the All-Star break. And for those who aren't familiar with it, net rating is just points scored versus points against per 100 possessions. So it scales on pace and everything like that. Portland has been very good since they made the trade. The problem with that is they might not have part of the reason they've been so good. And they've been second, but the Warriors have been a lot better, despite Durant missing almost that entire time. So I feel fairly comfortable at this moment that it's not going to be a sweep, but I also feel like the underlying dynamics are very favorable to the Warriors, so I think that it will be on the shortish side. So I'm going to go Warriors in five, but I could see it going six. I think five is a pretty comfortable range, though, with this series, just because of the dynamics in place.
Yeah, but yeah, I guess I hope Nurkic comes back, because I want Nurkic to come back. Like, I want that. I know that there's a lot of folks that are, you know, hemming and hawing, and everyone knows the Blazers' history with this stuff. But, you know, if he wants to play and he can play, like,
well, okay, I'm going to push back on that. I don't think it's if he wants to play. I think it's if he's, you'd be really, really patient with him, because what Nurkic has proven this year is that he's worth an investment. And there is an argument to be made here, as much as I hate it for tanking purposes, just for my own enjoyment, that if he, let's say he can't come back until game three or game four, is it worth it to take the risk of something that could potentially affect him, maybe limit his recovery this summer or anything else, for the prospect of raising your chances of winning the series by 5%? I'm not sure that's worth it.
No, and I will say, though, that the way that the series schedule has shaken out does give the Blazers a little bit more hope, and I think maybe makes it more likely that he does come back, because game three isn't till Saturday night after, you know, so he's going to have he could potentially have another week to heal. So I want them to be cautious with him, because he does fit really well with his team. It seems like they actually have a big three. Those, you know, Will Barton, I think, was the first person that said that after the Nuggets game, that Nurk gives the Blazers a big three. And so do you want to mortgage that future just to, like you said, increase your chances by about 5%? And that's the question. And I think, as you said rightly, is that it should be whether he's healed or not. The medical team needs to clear him. And, you know, he needs to be able to kind of actually go through a real workout, because most of the workouts that he's gone through have been, you know, 25 minutes shooting, like a little bit of explosion, but he hasn't done any contact. And that's not really the best way to prepare for a series against the Warriors, because as small as they play at times, they're a very physical team.
They are a very physical team. And the other reason why I say this is, you know, somebody who's kind of done this for a little while, one of the big adjustment periods that you see for players is their first summer after they've been with a new team. And I even saw this with the Warriors after they changed coaches, when they went from Kerr to Mark Jackson, because you have a better idea of what you are and what they want you to do, so you can change your off-season regimen very differently. And I would be reluctant. That's the big reason in many ways why I would be reluctant with Nurkic, because if you have a setback that takes a couple weeks or a month of that away, that development time could be central for a team that has the potential to, you know, maybe host a playoff series next year. And I'm a big believer in how good they've been. And, you know, there are financial issues that could weigh on this. And
that makes the development even more important, in my
opinion. Exactly. Exactly. So when you, it's one of these weird things that when you're higher on your future, you should be a little bit more cautious in your present. And while for selfish reasons, I want as much Nurkic as we can handle in this series, the Blazers are going to have brighter days next year than they have right now.
Yeah. And you making that point, you know, it's funny. We had Myers Leonard on the podcast around the trade deadline, and he talked about that because he had shoulder surgery, had to wait, had to recover and just kind of do rehab. And he really is hoping that this summer is going to be a summer where he can really play basketball and work on his game. And just being able to play in the offseason is a big thing. And yeah, that's a great point, that Nurkic is going to have a better idea of what he needs to do on the team. We'll get a regimen with the Blazers training staff, who have helped him lose quite a bit of weight since he got to Portland. So all of those things, you mix that in, you kind of want to be cautious. And so if he's healthy and can play in game 3 or 4, cool. But I would not mortgage the future on that, because he, like you said, he's worthy of an investment. And the way that they've played, wasn't smoke and mirrors when he was out there. Like, it was legit. They were good.
Exactly. And part of what I enjoy a lot about this series is the idea that I'm not as worried like I am, especially now with the injury with the Spurs and Grizzlies. Like, even if it's a short series, I don't think this is going to be a slog. I don't know if it's going to be a short series, but I think that it will be worth watching no matter what.
Excellent. I think that's a great place to wrap this up. Any parting thoughts? I think that was the great parting thought. We don't need any more parting thoughts, unless you have anything else that you do want to say about this series.
No, I think we'll have plenty of time to say it during the series. And that's why I'm going to be so excited to be doing a frequent podcast on this one, is the idea that there will be things to talk about each game. Even if we feel like the dynamics are in place, there are going to be nuances and wrinkles the whole way through.
Excellent. And you can hear about all those nuances and wrinkles on Locked On Warriors and Locked On Blazers throughout the series. Danny, thank you, and good luck with the series. It's going to be fun.
Thanks again to Eric Garcia Gunderson for taking the time to come on. You can listen to Locked On Blazers. They will be, of course, doing recaps of the games, however long the series lasts, and we'll probably do some of the podcasts together and some of them separate. Just depends on our timing and availability. And then you can also follow Eric on Twitter at Eric_Gunderson. That's Eric_Gunderson. As you would guess, I'm going to have episodes for each one that's going on. I'll probably do maybe small updates on the other series as it becomes relevant. I don't think I'm going to focus as much on that. And then just do other things throughout, talking with people, doing some solo work, and still have some stuff from the regular season that I want to catch up on. So try to hit all those things at once. Of course, you can keep checking out Locked On Warriors. Great way to do that is to subscribe, download every episode. For those of you who haven't listened to it yet, I also did a fun one with Marcus Thompson about his book on Steph Curry and numerous other things. We've known each other for years. We've covered the Warriors for years, so we go in a lot of different directions. Really did enjoy that one. And if you want to support the show, you can also leave a rating, leave a review. It's a really good thing that you could do to support this show and any other shows that you really, really like. If you have any feedback, good, bad, or indifferent, DannyLarueNBA@gmail.com, @DannyLarue on Twitter. So this will be the last podcast before the game on Sunday. I do not know exactly when the recap of that will come up, because I might be doing Twitter NBA show second screen with Nate Duncan that day. We're definitely going to do it on Saturday, first day of the playoffs. Really exciting. Don't know the exact timing yet, but you can follow me on Twitter, follow Nate Duncan at @NateDuncanNBA. And it's like you're watching the games with us. It's a different way of doing it. We've gotten a really nice response so far. And if you want to check it out, feel free. Thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.